All right, here we go. This is the Marysville Board of Education regular meeting of Thursday, September 20th, 2012. Can I have a roll call, please?
Mr. Mabee.
Here.
Mrs. Devine.
Here.
Mr. Lassiter.
Here.
Mrs. Powers.
Here.
Mrs. Greer.
Here.
All right, we are all here. Can we stand for the Pledge of Allegiance, please?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Okay, if you will notice in front of you, you have an agenda with an addendum on it. We are adding items. Item 19, the resolution consolidating the two bonds. So there are actually three resolutions to refinance those bonds. The third one was to consolidate. Number 20 was the list of potential reductions and cost-saving measures. 21 was a resolution for urgent necessity to initiate repairs having to do with the new hole in the board office. And 22 is for add-on to the employee district staff, which I don't think that has to be 22. You probably just add it on to. Let's just add that on to 16A. So instead of 22, please change that to 16A. And then the back page is the actual resolution for. Were there any other changes to the agenda that you folks would have? And I'll give you a second to just glance through there real quick. Yes, yours is number six, I believe.
Yeah. Okay. I just went right by.
No, I'm sorry. Yours is number seven. Okay. I don't know how it got to be number seven.
Yes.
6.1 under seven.
Thank you. Thank you.
I don't know. I don't. Anybody else? Okay. Hearing no further discussion, then I need a motion to approve that, please.
So moved.
Second.
Moved and second. Roll call, please.
Mrs. Devine.
Yes.
Mrs. Powers.
Yes.
Mr. Mabee.
Yes.
Mrs. Greer.
Yes.
Mr. Laster.
Yes.
Okay. Motion carries. Next up, Andy Culp and Carla Steele will be presenting about the third grade guarantee tonight. Madam and sir.
Well, first of all, thank you for giving us this opportunity to talk a little bit about the third grade guarantee and what it means for Marysville Exempted Village School District. So the targets for today's presentation are what we're going to share with you. We're going to provide an overview. We're going to discuss the implications and what it means. And so there are, I believe, five. So we're going to talk about board policy, which I think all of you have a copy of, three different board policies. Well, two policies, one regulation that goes with the corresponding board adopted policy. The process that we're going to follow, the communication plan, and then correspondingly the letters to parents and students with regard to the reading assessments that occur at K-4, and short-term implications, and then long-term implications.
And to start out, is what is the rationale for third grade guarantee? And again, it starts within the year 2013-14. That's when our students that are ending third grade must show a certain level of competency before moving on to fourth grade. But most of the language of the bill will take effect in this current year of 2012-2013, which we will talk you through all the things that we have in place so far. So the requirements, as Andy mentioned, all of the boards of education across the state are asked to adopt specific policies and procedures for annually assessing all of our children by September 30th in grades K through 3. That will be a diagnostic assessment that will help us get baseline data for where they begin at the start of each of the school year. A retention promotion policy, there is one for 2012-2013, and then another policy for 2013-14. In this current year of 2012-13, it's our current policy. which we can promote a student to fourth grade that did not pass or be proficient at the third grade OAA in the spring if it is deemed that the child is prepared academically, that the parents, the teacher, the principal are all willing to get together, evaluate the skills of that child, and allow the child to move on. But they must continue to receive intensive intervention, whether they remain in third grade or they are promoted on to fourth grade.
I'm sorry.
Yes.
I'm going to interrupt. So if we promote them to fourth grade, although we know they need intervention, at what point, I assume we continually give them those assessments until what? They reach a fourth grade level and then they're done?
So the cut score currently that is being discussed by Ohio Department of Education is based on the third grade reading OAA achievement. The cut score is 390. So 389 and below, if you haven't earned that score, then they would like for you to consider retention. However, there are some exclusions, and exclusions, which we'll get into, but the exclusions are special ed with like a specific reading disability or some other disability that would prevent you from being able to take that test. That would be identified in the IEP. Another is English as a second language. Mm-hmm. However, so we took a look at that in anticipation that that might be asked. And so the total number of current fourth grade students based on the spring OAA assessment on the third grade reading test who scored a 389 and below, negating the special ed criteria and the ESL criteria, were 18.
And they're receiving intervention now?
Yes.
The good news is, and I mean this sincerely as a compliment and honoring the history of Marysville, is there's a rather comprehensive reading program, K-5, throughout the district, but in particular at the elementary with the Literacy Collaborative Framework, Reading Recovery, and the assessments that they already have in place are really sound, best practices. And then what we need to improve on is, and this is part of the presentation, but our communication plan, adopting a board policy, and then I think tightening up the corresponding interventions.
Thank you.
And again, that new policy that says beginning with the 2013-2014 school year that the child must be retained, except, and Andy went over those just now, but again, a certain group of children who are limited English proficient, they have to be in the U.S. less than 2 years. There's special ed students who IEPs exempt them, and who demonstrate reading competency on alternative reading assessments. Now, what that is going to be, we don't know for sure yet. That's something that's still being worked out at ODE.
So if they fail the OAA, you can give them an alternative reading assessment?
Is what they're saying, but I think what it's going to be, Jeff, is probably going to be a compilation, would be my guess, of several different types of assessments or observations or evaluations that we would do. I think it would be difficult to base it on just one assessment, but it may be, because we look at the reading OAAs, the math OAAs, so it very well could be. But exactly what that's going to be, we're waiting to see that. And again, one of the things to keep in mind is that the child may not be proficient on the third grade reading OAA, but would be proficient in math, science, social studies. So that's going to be some implications for some blended classrooms, because we may be doing intensive intervention for reading, but that child will receive instruction for fourth grade in those other areas. And again, any student who's received intensive remediation for 2 years, retained in kindergarten, then that is a promotion at that point. Again, in the policy that we've asked you to take a look at is the specification that they must receive instruction from a high-performing teacher, which also has implications for us, because they're asking at the state level now that those teachers have reading endorsements. And that's going to prove to be something across the state that is, not, again, another unfunded mandate. because the number of teachers that we currently have at K-4 are minimal that have an extra reading endorsement. So it's.
I was going to ask you how many we have, but you may not know that.
We are looking at that now because one thing that's important, we can have teachers that have a reading endorsement but may not be certified or have a licensure for K-3. So you could have a reading endorsement and be an 8th grade teacher. Or, you know, so it's really going to be, there are a lot of things that we have to take a look at.
And not to belabor this too long, what does it take to get a certificate?
Now, the reading
endorsement. Yes, I'm sorry, the endorsement, yes.
You usually go, and I'm going to ask Carol to type in if she'd like to, because Carol went through the process probably most recently of all of everyone. But you go to the college or university that you graduated from. So they look at the coursework that you've taken. Yeah,
the hard part to answer your question is that it depends. And why it depends is because
it's not going to let me.
It depends on how many reading courses you took in your undergrad or post-secondary. And so, quite frankly, it really is contingent upon that. If you took some electives in a reading area, they may count towards that reading endorsement license. And so it's going to be very individualized. But I'll say on average, I'm going to throw a number out. I'm going to say 9 to 15 hours. Coursework?
Mm, possibly. And you have to take it, you have to pass an exam.
Okay.
There was also a Praxis exam that you had to take and receive a certain cut score on that.
Right.
So, in addition, like I received my master's in reading language arts, so I already had those four courses and then just picked up.
So there may be some people that have all the coursework they need, they just have to take the test.
But it has to be within a certain amount of time you have that coursework. If it were, let's say, 7 years ago, it may not count.
Okay.
And then again, that test itself costs money. So sometimes, you know, and that came out of my pocket, basically. So that's an additional cost.
And so we have to have that in place by next year, correct?
We have
to have them in front of high-performing teachers next year.
That's correct.
That is correct. Okay. And again, we talked about the reading endorsement. And then that plan for students to move on to fourth grade. And again, we talked about, you know, that they can go on in other subject areas that they're proficient. But also, we need to have in our policy, if they're proficient mid-year, they can then be promoted. So that's another condition that we need to take a look at. And then that whole idea is, Andy mentioned before, the communication to parents and families within 60 days of identifying students not on track, we have to have plans in place. As Andy mentioned, we have all of our benchmark assessments have already have bands that are deemed on track, not on track. We've already made that transition, and our assessments are already in place. Okay, you want to go, Andy?
Well, if you don't mind, click the button. It's just what I'm trying to. So, in essence, the way in which we're going to allocate students to determine whether they're going to be promoted or not is an on-track or not-on-track, and that's verbiage taken right from ODE. And the bottom part is what the process is for the reading, the third grade guarantee, and what additional interventions it's going to be. And if you look at the FAFSA or OSBA policy that I gave you, almost the identical verbiage is in there in terms of what actions and steps we need to take. And again, the good news is Marysville has those reading assessments in line. And so we assess, and we'll have all our assessments done by September 30th, and then we'll do it again mid-year so that we're able to measure not just achievement but growth in reading and identify them for more time and support for those kids needed. So we've already started this process. However, basically, as it outlines, we have a screening process. We have sound best practices assessments. We have a system of identifying those kids and plugging them into space and reading where they get more instruction and more time, not in place of or pull out of their reading class, but in addition to, because that's how you close the achievement gap in reading. It's addition to what they're already getting.
Can you explain bullet number two up there for me?
That is if it's similar to what we did with the program, if a parent would choose to have intervention services provided, say, by a Huntington or, Sylvan, that we have to have a list of providers available, but the school has to approve those providers.
Do we fund those as well?
That's another thing we're waiting
Generally speaking, the rule of thumb is if the school recommends it, then the school pays for it.
Right.
If the parents recommend it, then not always.
Okay, thank you.
But
that's
a
general rule of thumb.
Right, and the interventions we'll put in place will be far superior to what they can get
from an outside
provider, so that will take care of that problem. But we do have to have a list of providers if parents want to see that. Short-term implications. We will continue our implementation of Literacy Collaborative with renewed rigor and fidelity. We now have a coach back in every building, a literacy coach. We have intensive professional development planned. Our principals are leading that in each of the buildings, so it's a different model than we've been doing in the past. So we're very excited by the model that Andy and Diane has brought forward. you already have heard a lot about Literacy Collaborative, but I do want to say we are working very closely with the trainers and professors at OSU this year. We are able to send our coaches down for training free of cost, which is like a $20,000 to $22,000 cost.
Wow.
We're doing it in kind with them that I serve on their training team. So we're able then to bring back additional training for people in our, that other than our coaches that are going down. We also have been asked to sit in a chair on the International Data Evaluation Center team. They are doing U.S. norms and standards for the observation survey that we give at K and 1 in particular. We have U.S. norms in first grade. They're doing them for kindergarten and second grade. We get to sit at the table, and they'll use our data to help in that process. So again, that's a good thing. Two of the professors at OSU, one holds the Mari Clay Chair at OSU. They both are serving on the third grade guarantee work group. So we'll have an inside information as they work through that process too. And again, we're going to participate in our level literacy intervention data collection and research project. So we're going to really be looking, collecting our data, analyzing it, but then making very good laser-focused instructional decisions for our kids. As we said, our diagnostic assessments are in place. Again, those are what we are currently administering. The one that will count that will report the schools or the scores for, I'm sorry, to ODE is the benchmark assessment system. And Andy, you can talk about the communication.
So again, one of the critical components of the third grade guarantee isn't just having a sound process of assessing kids where they are, but it is also communicating when two parents where their kids are and when they're not where they need to be, what it is you're going to do and what does that look like. So there needs to be a plan, a letter to parents. You need to progress monitor, which is a fancy word for saying monitor growth of kids regularly and timely. And if it's not working, adjust your instruction so that it will. And so in essence, they're formalizing that communication plan. And this does nothing but reflect best practices. And again, the great news is, because of the leadership here and Carla's relationship with OSU, the Literacy Collaborative Framework, a lot of this is already in place.
And the 18 students you were talking about, you've already done that test for this year? That's where the 18 came from?
Yes. And so just, if you were to look at it, irrespective of this third grade guarantee, those 18 kids, because of what is already in place, are getting intensive reading intervention already.
And those are based on their OAA scores from this spring. So if that would have gone into effect, those are our current
The difference being is that they wouldn't, quote-unquote, be retained for reading in third grade. They're in fourth grade. They're just getting intensive reading intervention as part of the model that we're continually improving, by the way, continually reflecting on, but the model that's there. That's a great question.
And as Andy mentioned too, that cut score is 390 at this point for this year, but it will continually rise to 400 and above. So that's something we keep in our planning thoughts along the way.
So, you know, as kind of your question alluded to earlier, you know, I do think there are some long-term implications that we as a district and a board need to begin to think about in a team, and that is the allocation of reading intervention services may need to be adjusted. In other words, for example, just off the top of my head, student data and the needs of the kids by building might drive resources. Not everybody's getting the same across the board. That's just an example. We may need to look at assignments of teachers based on reading endorsement. Mm-hmm. I mean, that is an important factor. Expansion of research-based intervention strategies. In other words, if what we have in place for certain kids isn't working, we need to change and adapt so that we can plug in a program that does work for this kid because it's about all kids. And then we need to continue the great work that's already in place with the Literacy Collaborative program. And the final bullet we added here is I do think we need to take a look at some type of Summer Bridge reading program so that for these kids that we identify that need extra time and support in reading, you know, research is very clear that when you analyze growth and it's June, July, and August, there's regression. And so what is it that we as a district can do to commit to those kids who we identify need more reading focus over the summer so that there isn't that regression? In fact, there's an acceleration. But obviously there's cost associated with doing that.
And the current summer school is 3 weeks in July, only for third grade at this point. At one time, we did do intervention for K through 3, and also included 4 through 6 at one point. So to possibly look at least K-3 again because of all of this.
Two more quick points, just so you know. We put copies of drafts of the letters and the corresponding plans that we would like to use. These are drafts, let me say that. These are drafts, but for, you know, we have working drafts in place to help firm up our communication plans to parents and students. And then in your board packets, there were three different policies. The first was a promotion and retention policy, and the only, that's an existing policy. There's just, if you look on the back in bold, you saw, I think it's two sentences, and basically the two sentences says, in lieu of the third grade guarantee, there may be a retention. Please refer to the third grade guarantee. So that's the only difference in that policy. And then the two others are, one is a policy and the other is a regulation. The regulation is just, quite frankly, very similar to this PowerPoint. It kind of offers a how-to, but the third grade policy is just that. It outlines everything that we just reviewed on the PowerPoint. And it is a required policy.
By the end of the month.
That's correct.
And Andy, would it be fair to say, too, we have decided that we will go to each of the buildings and do a parent community presentation at each of the buildings because we feel it's very important to bring everybody on board and make sure the information is there. So we're going to go on the road.
Now, you haven't done your benchmark assessments yet this year, have you?
Yes.
You have?
We kindergarten and first grade is completely finished.
Right, but I was talking about third grade.
Yeah, and third grade is probably about two-thirds, three-fourths of the way finished. They're underway now, the same with second grade. So we are on track to get everything done by the 30th.
And then your letters will go out shortly thereafter?
We'll input the data into testing loops.
And shortly.
Yes, and then we'll get all of the item analysis done. We'll have all the leveling done.
30 days.
And we'll be there.
So do we notify the first grade kids and the second grade kids when they're off track instead of on track? So that's, do a K-3 every year.
Again, so. I mean, you know, early identification, remediation, intervention. I mean, you know, not to get on my soapbox, but obviously, you know, that kindergarten model of how do we, you know, one of the things we might want to think about is, in lieu of this, you know, if we believe that all kids need to meet this benchmark for my third grade. What other ways? Now, I know money's, I know there's multiple prisms we need to look and evaluate this through, but early reading, identification, and more time and support are important. And so how can we be creative for those that need it most to provide that for them?
And we've been doing that all along anyway, so have we not?
Absolutely.
Right. So, I mean, really the difference here is maybe the communication piece
And I think fine-tuning some of the protocols and procedures that we've had in place. I think we're farther ahead in the game than a lot of districts are, but we have a lot of work to do. I would also like to add, too, for those children who need intervention and who are not on track, but for those children who are on track and are above level, we can't forget them either.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the importance of differentiation and the professional development that we're doing with our teachers, with our principals and coaches, and Diane and Andy leading that. So,
do we have any kind of like reading buddy programs or anything where some of the
older kids
or maybe the more advanced kids work with the other ones? And
we do in the different buildings. They handle it different ways. I know, for example, kindergarten at Mill Valley partnered with first grade last year. Mm-hmm. I know, Maven, you have third and first grade. Mm-hmm. So we do have those partnering models going mm-hmm. on in different ways. So anything we can do, the bottom line is the more kids read continuous text, they learn by doing. Mm-hmm. And reading is the answer to that. So we're making sure that happens.
Good. Have you considered, with what you want to maybe try over the summer, collaborating with our library? I mean, they always put on a nice summer reading program.
I think that's a great idea.
And we have done that. We send their information home at the end of each year, and we make sure that is something we even mention in conferences and different correspondence.
But like looking forward to, you know, something.
Yeah, how can we maybe capitalize on shared resources?
Right, right.
Both in terms of personnel and resources in terms of books, mm-hmm. You know, so that we can create even a more robust summer bridge or summer intervention program. I think that's a great idea.
And we thank you for your continued support because you've been there with us all along the way, and we can do this without you. So
you know, you could even get into to partnering with Scott's or Honda and seeing if you could mm-hmm. get some reading buddies out of there. I don't know if they're open to that, but.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Thank you.
Anybody have any other questions? All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Very informative. All right. Next up on the list, the superintendent's report.
All right. Well, I guess I should probably start with our exciting week this week. I know we talked about it Monday, but kind of give you a quick update. Mike has been working with both insurance companies have been in and starting to get some quotes to come in. Insurance company requires three different estimates and the whole process, so that is in the works. He's really trying to make it a four-week project. I think that might be a bit lofty for us, but the accommodations of this facility have quite honestly worked out very well for us, so we're pretty fortunate, I know, to have this available for this kind of situation. I would just want to mention again, we were really, the fiscal department was set up the same day by 1 o'clock, mm-hmm. and everybody else was in by the end of that same day, which is really a remarkable undertaking, and it happened because of, you know, all the dedicated people here, principals, semi-custodians, maintenance staff, our own groups, and can't say enough about everything they did to make that happen, and I know I said it Monday, but that wouldn't happen everywhere, and it's a reminder of what a special place the school district is, to me anyways.
So you must have got payroll out, because I haven't got any phone calls.
That was priority.
Direct deposit emails were received today.
How about that? I promise you, I would have known today.
That was priority. Also, a bit of celebration. I know I sent you an email earlier in the week about our five National Merit semifinalists. That's huge for those students, very excited for them. We will be inviting them to the next board meeting. We were going to do it tonight, but several of them already had other activities. So we're going to shoot for next month and have a resolution honoring them and their success. So very proud of that. I believe that's the highest.
Yeah, when's the actual finalist selection for that?
It'll be in the spring.
The spring?
Yeah, we'll get information a little bit later. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I forget the deadline for the application. They actually do an application part from here.
Right.
And then it's screened from there. So
that's very cool. Mm-hmm.
So we'll keep you posted on that, but we'll have them here to celebrate next month. Just a little update on the levy. Last night, Cindy and I presented to Chamber, and they did give us the thumbs up in support for the levy.
They did a very nice job, I promise you that.
That's good.
Chamber was very impressed with these two ladies. So.
Good. Well, it was good, and we are feeling very positive about that. So things are kind of off and running. Committees are starting to take run with their different initiatives, and trying to get the Speakers Bureau up and running as well. So kind of things are falling in place as we speak. A lot of great people giving up a lot of time, again, speaking to the great community here. I also have a quick introduction, if that's okay. I have a superintendent. I said social worker earlier. Superintendent intern. Well, maybe that's how he feels with Andy and I these days, right? But Tom Carroll is joining us, and he's going to be doing some different work for the district and spending time with Andy and I. And I told him I'm not sure what he might learn because we've never done it before either. So happy to have Tom with us as well. So you don't say, who's that guy? I don't recognize.
He keeps hanging around, right?
That's right. I think it was Tracy mentioned the Power School, so I thought I'd give a little update on Power School training. We invited parents in to go over the login. We've had consistently 5 parents come in. One night we had 10. I think tonight Andy said we have 5 or 6 again to help with their logins and getting them set up. So I think each night was a different level, grade level. In whole, it was successful. I know Monday was a little rocky because Power School itself went down. But we were pleased to offer that to parents. I wanted to mention as well, we've been talking a lot about Common Core with this group. And as you know, the principals have been working on building work plans and transition plans. So today at Administrative Council, we posted everybody's work plan, and then the other buildings came through and gave feedback to the other principals about the work plans, and then also discovered pieces of other work plans that they might want to include in theirs. So we get together in about 2 weeks and hope to finalize those work plans. I can tell you the conversation was amazing, and our principals were very engaged in the development and conversation and stealing ideas from each other, and left feeling very energized. I was very pleased with today. So those pieces are coming together very nicely. The plan will be then each day that we have that's an in-service or PD or a prime time, then we will be communicating through an email blast to our parents about the work that's been accomplished. So we'll post those work plans on the web so parents can see them. I've asked principals to talk about them in parent groups or PTA, PTO meetings, and then give updates to those groups as we move along. So I think it's important for them to understand the work that our teachers are engaged in as we make this huge transition. So. And then additionally, when they come for their nights, they will be talking to you about the work they are doing and evidence of that work with teachers or coaches or whoever they choose to bring. So that'll kind of increase that communication piece for us. And I think it's important to know that it's already interim time. It's hard to believe, but the end of the week, yeah, it's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, end of the week. Tomorrow. Being the end of the week.
And last but not least, I guess I would just I sent an email out earlier in the week just to touch again that bus drivers did take a vote to unionize. That vote came out to 16 yes, 14 no. and 4 no votes. And at this point, before that comes official, then the CERB group will have to have a board meeting and certify the vote. That has to take place within 10 days of our vote, which I believe is October 3rd or 4th is the date for that meeting. And then a process would take place following that.
So it just needed a majority of yes to pass?
Correct.
And at what point do we have to start to do stuff?
That is a question we've been asking today. It looks like within 90 days of the notification to us, so there will be a letter prompting us that we have 90 days to get involved in negotiations.
I think they have to ratify their, CERB has to ratify their vote first.
Within 10, yes.
Yeah. And then we have 90 days from then. Time to prepare as a board with
right.
our governance team.
Absolutely.
Again, I think that goes back to going for the RFPs for our you know, going out looking for another attorneys. You know, I think we'll probably certainly want one with a lot of negotiations and you know, because we're starting from scratch.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's whole different. I mean, I don't know how many of you have ever been to a place that started a union. I've always been to places that was already there. So,
yeah.
So I mean, that process to me is it's new. So I think. Legal help would be.
Two board meetings a month are a long way off for us.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. No.
Yeah. So I'll keep you informed as that process moves forward. And I think those were the big things I had listed. Again, thanks for your flexibility, but I think this facility is working out okay for us.
We just get a window open in here, it'd probably be all right.
Are you hot? Sorry.
Yes, I am. Yes, I am. Thank you.
That
I am. I'm moving on. Next up is the treasurer's report.
Well, as we have agreed to as a part of our governance team, we anytime there's a big item coming up, we bring it up to you the first time, and then you vote the following month. So this month is our forecast. So, as we talked about on Monday night, that I did go attend a training on last Thursday and Friday, and there's a new model that we're using this year that looks very similar, but I'm just going to go through a few things, and you've got it in front of you. This forecast, the forecast front page, looks the same as the old one, which is the state-mandated pages. The numbers on the side, those are all state-mandated, so everything looks the same. So as we scroll over here, and on this it's column J, you'll see $45,199,000 in revenue, and then with the note for the House Bill 264, it'll be $45,801,000 this year that we'll be receiving. And then our expenditures are going to be $47,208,000 deficit spending of $1.4 million, and our ending balance is $1.6 million. And one thing in the audit that the auditors asked me to make sure I put in are what we expect in the encumbrances, and so our encumbrances are on there about $275,000 this year. This does have the new levy in for this year.
Are we allowed to forecast for that?
We do. That is not included in our revenue. That's why it's down at the bottom.
Okay, so we can still turn that into the state with
yes,
that on
you
there?
Yes, they still want to know that information.
You always put that in down there.
Yeah,
it's always been down. It's on, and I'm just going to use the
15.
Line 13, 13.01 for income tax property, 13.02. Mm-hmm. So those are there. If you look at the next column to the right, it's for fiscal year 14. You'll see that the levies that will be coming out that expire in 14 are there on the lines right above that, and it accepts that. So let's look at the revenue just a little bit, and that way it'll give you an idea of what this tool can do for us. I'm going to start something different. If you look at your notes, I've sort of, in the note sheets that I sent you, gave you the actual booklet type thing, and states how we got all this information. There's the first note on the general property tax, the first chart there of information gives us the class one, and bear with me because I'm still learning this one. Well, first I gave you a forecast, on forecast page, I gave you a comparison, Doug, I think you and I talked about how do we compare from last year, and I need to go to my financials, and then go to a forecast compare, and you asked the other day of how that compares. Here's what it is from our May forecast for this year. So our real estate, we had $1 million. I can't really read that one. Sorry about that. Can't read that from here. It was $19 million, and then it's $18.9 million. It's the blue line here. So that's all. I've given you all these sheets within the packet of information here. Yeah, it's the second page within the packet of the under the forecast sheet. So, and then the property tax, you'll see we're real close there. The unrestricted grants and aids were very close there. Overall, it's very close on what we thought was. There's some changes. But it gives you an information there on how close we were, and that's an automatic comparison of what we did in May and what we do in October. Once we set our forecast, I'll set those numbers. So then come May, we'll start looking how do we compare each time we make a change in it. So that's one thing that we'll be looking at there on the comparison. Then on the revenues on our data entry sheet, and I go to real estate, if I can see it from here, real estate settlements, and I come down here and do a settlement analysis. This is a little different, and that's what the information is I gave you on that chart within the notes page. We are now able to forecast class one, class two separately, not combined. They're separate just like we have to. They have their own effective millage rates, they have their own effective amounts that they bring in. So this gives us that total, and then you'll see that our combined first class, which would be the January, because these are in calendar years, these are in collection years, the January collection was 51.6%. We've gotten the second half already in, it was 48.4. I think last year in my notes I had 52 and 48, that whole, you know, so it's real close on what we were thinking overall, but that gives us some ideas of that. Then when we go to the revenue, each page, and we'll talk about each page real quick here, this gives us our information on our notes on where we get that, where it's coming from, and that gives you that total amount. It also shows on the sheets that I've given you the year-over-year change in revenue. So you look at these blocks down here, those year-over-year changes are the negatives are from our levies. So those, as you go through here, I'm just going to point out the areas that you need to look at when you're looking at the notes and all that I've given you. We'll go to our tangible personal property tax, the year-over-year changes, the detailed notes.
You said levies, you're talking about ones that are up for renewal?
Yes, the renewals, yes. The ones that are up for renewals. And that just does the same thing for the year over year. But you see, it's not as much with tangible personal property tax. That's only our PUP. Only personal utilities receives. But we still have a percentage going down. Over the last few years, it's about a 1% change in valuations. And then a couple of the other ones I want to touch on tonight. Unrestricted grants and aids. Go to our detail note. And it does the same thing. And you'll see we got an increase last year. It was about $688,000. We did get an increase there. We're showing a little bit of an increase here. That's mainly because of the number of students and what they've got projected. The following year is a decrease. In fiscal year 10 and 11, you'll see those two amounts, the unrestricted went down a lot because state funding was down. The following note will show where that went into play at when it was when we received all our stimulus dollars. Well, these are hard to read. The stimulus dollars, you'll see that in 10 and 11, those went up big time. 12 went down because we didn't receive as much. 13 is going to go down, and then 14 is down. And then from there on out, it's based on the same amount. The only thing that's additional in here in for unrestricted or restricted grants and aids is the end of our Ed Jobs grant is being received. So that's that extra $243,000. Otherwise, the only thing that's in this is our career tech. Those are for the vocational programs at the high school and middle school. Then the last one that I'm going to talk about on revenue is our property tax hold harmless. This is also new, and as you look at your note that you're in the packet there, or when you look at the notes later on, you'll see that we've included the 10% rollback, the residential, the 2.5% residential rollback, the homestead. It used to be it was all just lumped in together. Now we can track how much is really being received, and are they giving us as much as what we thought. We're also getting this information now from Andrea. We never received that before, so the county auditors are also helping us out in this realm, trying to figure out, yes, we need to let them know how much is this. I mean, this is 12.5% or more percent of our taxes that are coming in. We as taxpayers don't have to pay it. It's taken off ours, and the state pays us this amount. So then we also have our TPP changes here, the 2% decrease in fiscal year 12 and 13, and then the remainder of the forecast, we've got the 1% going down. That's the one area that we're not sure about. And then the amount in this reservation is, if we don't pass our renewals, this is how much we will lose from those. And this really shows that a lot better than the old model did.
That's just automatic shows that?
That's automatic that shows, cool. Yeah. That
but
automatic.
That's the 289.
Yeah, the 289 amounts. Is okay. Based on if we lose those levies in 2014.
The renewal ones that are
the five mil that is renewal. And the reason why it goes up so much more in the following year, you're looking at the five plus the 6.56 of mils. Yeah, exactly. So that goes up.
So the TPP for a reservation, that is only just the hold harmless?
That's only the hold harmless amounts that we would lose if those amounts come out, if we don't pass those levies renewals. So that makes a big difference. So that gives us a number that we've got to shoot for. I mean, we could have figured it before, but it just gives it to us immediately. And it's based on pulling everything out separately. It's getting it more close to what we really have. So it's really nice. So now if we look at our expenditure side, personal services, this is what they call the dashboard. It gives us all kinds of little charts and shows all kinds of things. In your note pages, I've added some of these charts, especially in the revenue areas. You want to look at here, we have an enrollment page that we can work on, and we have an FTE employee page. It pulls this information in. As you can see, what we've been saying the last year or so is that our enrollment is not going up like it was. If we see some differences, then we'll be able to post it here. We also have a page that shows our census, that birth to age 17 for anybody within our school district. They can get that information.
So that's actually showing how many students we have in chairs?
This shows in chairs, yeah. This shows our ADM and all. And then our...
This is not pulling from ODE?
What they did was they've got it for each individual company or school district that they're working with, and it pulls from the U.S. Census. And there's another group out of Cleveland State, the Ohio Department of one of the departments. And then Cleveland State has a statistical report that works with them. They pulled them together and gave us our census data. So it's
and that's the birth rate stuff, right?
The birth rate, yeah.
But the enrollment data.
The enrollment data is what we've entered as far as what we have on ODE, and then I just input it onto the spreadsheets. Yeah.
And that birth data just gives us some guidelines.
It gives us a really
what we might.
Exactly, the good guidelines. So then you can see, look at our employment FTEs, and that's what was taken from. There's an EMIS report that shows exactly what they are, and I just bottom it out right now for 14, 15, 16, 17. We can work on that, and I will be working on that, but it's a new whole information that I'm like, wow, I've got some work to do, but we'll get it there. And that basically 2012 is the 588, and then we'll go from there and start working on what we've got going forward. So as we look at that, then to look at here is our impacts. This is our personnel. It looks at what we have lost here in staffing this year for the retirement incentive. We went back to 26 pays, so a lot of that, and then our last payments, the last few payments of the year for the ed jobs. Within that, this whole information here in our notes, we can go into, and bear with me, I'm going to have to double check, but here it is. This note here gives us exactly the percentage that we have in our certified staff, classified staff, administrators, and all that. That gives us a percentage. So when we break those out and really look at what's going on, as we said, we're going to put in a 2%. It's down here, annual percent change for other. That's where it's at. Now, if I wanted to say experience, and the experience for steps for certified was 1.5, we could put them here. If the experience for classified staff is a 0.75, we can put them there. So that information, we can change that, and it's going to be a lot more accurate than what it was before.
Because there's one number for
everybody. Yeah, it was one number. It was a 1% for everybody.
With an average and everything.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
Cool.
That's really neat.
Yeah. So you can tell who the numbers people are over here.
<It's> like, ooh.
So then we do the same thing for our benefits, and right now we got good news that it looks like we are going to have 7% increase this year in our medical insurance. So we have that information here, salaries, fringes, all that information in the notes. And that gives us the percent here for the retirement and benefits, and so we've got that in there. And if I probably would have filled that in, I would have had to make that adjustment on the other page. And here is an annual percentage we can start playing with. What's our annual percentage going to be for our dental? What's it going to be for? It even has a plan C, a plan D. We've got life, all those type of things. So we can really start looking at that. When Diane and I are starting, and our team starts saying, okay, what are we doing for all this to get everything put together, what's it going to cost? And she says, hey, Cindy, what's a 5% on life insurance? And once these numbers are filled in totally, it'll be able to do that. Right now, I didn't have the time to do that, but I'm going to start working on that. So it'll be filled in at least by May, so we can really get some good numbers in there. The other ones I just want to point out to you are on the purchase services. I've added those extra pages. Down at the bottom, it has note 1 for open enrollment. It has a note 2 and a note 3. So let's just look at those real quick. Note 1 has our open enrollment, what we think and what I think is going to happen. I just bumped it up every time, the community school by $10,000. Open enrollment is $850,000, bumped that up. So those type of things I've added in there and just thought, well, let's give it an idea. And I'll look, once we start getting the information in this year, was that enough to look for each year, or should I bump that up a little bit more? And then note 2 here shows the other items. I took everything out and then started adding things back in. And so I thought maybe this would be give us a better idea of the big items. These are going to give us our big ticket items. And then on note three, I did the same thing, but instead, I don't like this color, are just our utilities. So you see the electricity is 990,000, water and sewer both at 100, water and sewer at 170,000, natural gas at 170,000. So I've included those pages for you for that. I've done the same thing when we look at our supplies and materials, a 2% and then 3% as it is right now, and then the additional here. So those are all within there, and they all are about the same area, but as we go back to this, it really shows very much that we need that levy that we have. It's included here, and it really is probably right now, unless we do a lot of other things and keep control of our expenditures.
So when you put numbers in those back pages, is it like the forward automatically kind of calculate forward to this front page, or do you
it'll automatically calculate.
It doesn't give you like a recommended number then?
No.
So then the pages that aren't filled in, is it, how does that work? Do you just, are you able to just kind of punch in a number?
Yeah. Okay. On the pages, like just on, if you go here to the detail note, if they aren't filled in, if I don't have anything down in these notes, I'm able to do it here as a, if it's an ongoing an item. Let me go back to revenue. There was one page that I didn't talk about. And then that'll show you what it does. Adjustments from the model for fiscal year 12, that wasn't quite, when they rolled it over from what we had to what we ended up, that's what we needed to make that adjustment. You'll see that I added 50,000 in here as a one-time adjustment, and that won't carry forward then to the following year. But then ongoing adjustments, I've added some money in here for our for the casino dollars. We know that we're going to get something in by January 31st. We think it's $21 per student per ADM, and I figured $53.40. And so that might be low, but I would rather do low than too high. And so the following year, we should get $71. All that's in there is different is the $50 times the same ADM. And the following year is $82. It's just the $11. So I did add that. And so once we're there, we're at the top that we're going to get. I don't have to calculate that any longer. So that's where you put those in. So you can do that in any of the notes.
You'd have to adjust if the ADM changes.
I'd have to adjust if the ADM would change, and I'd have to adjust if the dollar amount changes. Right. The other thing that, you know, this is one I put a note in here, needs to review on what we might get in the second and third year, mainly because if they give us the casino money, and that's extra, just like they did when the lottery came around, they started taking that out of our foundation, the total amount of the foundation. Is that going to happen or not? I don't know, but that's something. They have to give us the casino money in this way unless they change the constitutional amendment. But they can take that casino money. You're getting it there. We're going to take it out of this pot. So that's one way that we've just got to watch and keep our eyes on what's going on with the state. So with that, I too want to say, after this, the accident was very stressful on my department, especially being a payroll week. They came through like a bunch of troopers. They're all in one room now, and they were on the paper the other day, doing a great job. Laura is having some, just like any accident, you have some stressful moments, and also we're working with her through that, but she's okay, and she didn't get hurt, and we're all very thankful of that. But I can't tell you enough how these people in this department and this district have come together and worked with each other on this. We sent out an email, hang on to everything, we can't take anything for a while, and we didn't get anything for 2 days. So thank you to everybody in the district, because they made it easy for us.
Thank you.
That's my report.
Well, I got to say, that sure makes for a much more accurate forecast on doing it that way. Yeah. I mean, that's pretty neat. I'm geeking over that.
And anytime you guys want to come in, just come on in and we'll play.
That's what I was going to ask.
Yeah.
We'll come in and play. We'll even come and get a big screen so we can see it.
All right. Yeah, really.
Something bigger than a 4.5. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. I didn't realize how old I was getting. I have to read that forecast. Okay, yeah, next up is the Ohio High Point Report.
All right. Well, the meeting is next week, but I think I have notes from last meeting. So we talked last meeting mainly about the adult education, kind of moving into more of a customized training for local businesses. And I didn't realize it, but they have an acronym for it called BITES, which stands for Business, Industry, Technology, and Education Solutions. So we'll see how that comes along. But,
very cool.
Yeah, that's pretty neat. Speaking of cool, one of the things that I thought I'd share about what's going on in High Point, Graham High School has a biomedical science satellite program. And I guess it's a there's four different steps of the program, so you can actually get into it as a freshman and go all the way through the senior. And what they're doing is when they came into the level one, the first program, they walked into a crime scene, and they had this fiction person that was supposedly killed, and they had I got some pictures I want to show. So it's kind of neat. It's a whole crime scene, and so the whole year they're going to walk through this, grabbing evidence, and then in their program they'll learn how to gather data and hopefully solve it at the end of their year. So I thought that was kind of neat. The other thing that I found out was that our construction trades satellite program is, I think, down to 3 students here in Marysville.
We're back up a little bit. We're hoping to possibly use this building as a satellite classroom. There are some issues with location with the last classroom, so Mike is working with from High Point to possibly use the classrooms here to do their classroom work, and then their lab work will still be out in the field.
Yeah, once you send them over to the board office, there's a project that needs to be done over there.
And correct me if I'm wrong, I thought the problem was just trying to get students to be interested in the program. So.
And they thought a limitation was possibly not having the classroom at the high school, like some of the other satellite programs. Their classroom was actually held at their lab, and there were some issues with that. So they were hoping to, they've changed their lab location, but they need a classroom space now.
Got it. And so then hopefully that'll
right. I think it was closer to the 10 range now, maybe 8 or 9. So she was feeling better about that when we met.
Okay. Where's their lab location at, do you know? Is it UCO? Is it still UCO?
Well, no, they're doing an on-site lab now. Instead of doing the construction there and moving it, they're doing an on-site piece now. So there were a few days they would report to a classroom, and then other days they would just be going right on location.
Yeah, definitely if we can get the satellite location down here, that's, they can still be involved in the school and stuff like that.
That's right.
So it's not taking place at UCO anymore at all? Nothing's going on there?
That's my understanding.
Yes.
Glad to see. Sorry, we're still on your report.
No, that's all right. I was actually going to pass around the pictures. That was it.
That was it? Great. All right, thank you. Next up is our legislative report.
I don't really have much of any kind of a report, but I did want to mention a poll that had come out that voters trust their local boards of education over their state officials on decision making by kind of a huge extent. So the people that they polled, I think they're actually, the further away from the school district you got, the less they trusted the legislators to make better decisions, whether it was the State Department of Education or the state legislators. So I think that's good news for pretty much all of our local boards of education, that their communities feel very good about the decisions they're making for the kids in their communities.
Very good. A positive report.
It is. So I'll just end with that.
Excellent. It's always good to end on a high note. Next up, the Finance Committee report.
Okay. We met on September 10th, and we introduced, we had two new members showing up. It was Dale Jenkins, who is a classified member, and Greg Roars, a certified. Am I right on that? I was getting mixed up. So they joined our team, and we talked, Cindy just gave us a few updates and talked about the insurance process and the insurance committee and how they work through those issues. And then we reviewed our permanent appropriations, also had a quick review of the audit, and then the committee work. We talked to them about looking at some cash balance policies, and so Cindy provided a lot of copies of other school districts' policies. Mm-hmm. And so from that meeting on September 10th until our next meeting coming up on October 1st, the group is supposed to read through those different policies so that we can discuss cash balance policies at our next meeting. Also, just had a quick review of Mike White's presentation that he had given at the previous meeting, and Kim O'Neill had just brought up the concern of safety issues, specifically the fueling center for transportation, just saying that that was a concern, and how much they appreciated Mike sharing a lot of information with the committee, and that was really, that was what we did.
Any feedback on our appropriations?
Not really. I don't think so. Yeah, I mean, just kind of, we did. I think you got there, you might have missed it. Yeah, you were a little bit late, but yeah.
No, we got.
So it's a good meeting. So yeah, our next meeting is October 1st.
Great. All right, great, thank you. Mm-hmm. Next up is public participation. Is there anybody that'd like to address the board at this time? Yes, Mr. Brandfast.
Yeah, I have a question about a Tuesday special board meeting.
Mondays,
a special board meeting about the clarification of trying to make Marysville sports self-sustainable within 5 years. How realistic of a goal is that, and has that been done anyplace else?
Yeah, I'll let Diane answer that.
The conversation was really around us. I met with Joe and Matt this week and started generating ideas and having the conversation. And as I told you, the board, I knew it was pretty lofty. I'm not sure, but we need a plan to try to complement that and do an audit, per sport audit, which we don't seem to have in place at this point. So really it's looking at that overall picture and then seeing what the needs we would have and what are the possible opportunities we could look at as a school district to offset that cost. So Matt and Joe definitely had a lot of ideas and things they were going to go out, and we're going to meet monthly to try to touch base on that. It's not something that's going to change in a year, and I think I said that on Monday night, but I'd like to be able to come forward with some, even if we could cut it in half, I think that would be great. And start to explore those possibilities. The things I told them is we're not interested in necessarily reducing any offerings or increasing pay to participate. So there are some parameters to that. I think we did a lot of brainstorming, idea generation at this point, and so we're going to move forward from there. Is it realistic? Not sure that it's realistic to think we're going to get to that final number, but we certainly need to have that sitting out there as something we're working towards.
I know a lot of people were fearful that it's going to mean dramatic cuts that, you know, we're all
sure
facing, and, you know, having that as a goal is great, but, you know, it seems like if we go out to outside businesses, we're at the point now where everyone's knocking on those doors, and we're all pinching, and, you know, you can ask Honda, or you can go to Scotts, or you can go to Memorial Hospital, but so is probably everyone else. And,
right. Right. And I think two things. I hope you heard me saying that I am, we're not interested in reducing anything.
Yeah.
And also understand that I think we have to commit to the community. I'm a fan of extracurriculars. I'm a result of playing high school sports and college sports, and I've been a high school principal where there were no athletics, and I can tell you that it was the most miserable experience of my career for kids, community, staff. But also the reality is it is an extracurricular, and that's kind of the conversation I had with Matt and Joe. So in order to be good stewards of taxpayer dollars, I think we have to commit to looking maybe for opportunities to do things differently and create some revenue. So that's really the charge. I don't have a plan. We are looking at what some other school districts are doing. That will be part of the job and bring that research back together. And they're not in it alone. Andy and I are both committed to work with them to help put something together. As supportive as this community is, and we had a lot of conversation about that, I would be shocked that there's not something we can put together that would make a nice dent into that amount of money that isn't knocking on, you know, I would agree with you, Scott's doors, but something that is community-based, something that gives back in some way to the community, but lets them recognize the outstanding athletes and kids that we have in this district. What that is exactly, I'm not sure, but that's what we're going to work on.
Okay.
Is that fair? And if you want to be a part of that, we'd be happy to be a part of that.
Thanks for signing up, Kevin.
It was just one of those things where there's a lot, you know, you've heard that. And
well, I heard everything from we're going to club sports, we're going to, which couldn't be further from the truth if you listen to the, but I understand how that happens too. So I appreciate you coming and asking the question. And I would encourage you along the way, if you have questions, don't hesitate to call or email me. Because this is not a one fix-all solution. That's just not the situation we're in. So it's going to take us working together to make a difference in that. And the more we can help clean up those rural mills together, the better off we are. And then helps us be on the same page.
Thanks.
Cool.
Is there anybody else who wanted to address the board?
They might not want to if they think they're getting stuck on the committee.
We need one more committee leader. Besides Kevin.
Can I say something, Kevin? And you've been with us through all this, is that, you know, like we created the bingos at one point when the boys were in. I think that's the kind of revenues that, you know, the fundraisers, the things that the parents need to jump on board and, you know, like we all used to do and have and to do that. So I think it's going to be not just a school-wide thing, but a community thing to get that up and running again. And we made a lot of money with that.
Yeah.
And so it's getting creative and having maybe committees that will form and saying, you know, we can do this again. We can jump out there and raise the money for these kids and do it in a fun way.
At that time. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Is that clear? Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Next up, we have one discussion item. Amy would like to talk about organizing a committee against drugs.
Yes. As you all know, that's kind of my forte thing, and I get a lot of feedback about the drug situation. Heard kids saying they don't even want to go in the bathroom because other kids are shooting up with heroin. All these types of things have been said. I think we need to have a separate committee, and I know that there are people are involved that want to be involved in this. Ways that we can look at what we can do, what other school districts are doing. Are they bringing in the dogs? Are they doing this? I know the Sheriff's Department is willing to sit down with us, the Marysville Police Department partner up with us. But I think that we have to get it across. We're messing with some really dangerous drugs nowadays. It's not marijuana. It's, you know, we're talking about one time they shoot up, they can end up dead. So we're talking about something that I think that we need to get a handle on, sit down, discuss it monthly, discuss it with the Sheriff's Department, get their ideas, the police department, the principals, bring things to them. I think we need to educate our children and our parents a lot younger than we're doing. I think we need to start educating in grade school. I think waiting till junior high is too late. They're already going to be approached. When they're approached, they have no idea. I just had one little girl out of my drug court
that came to me, who went to Marysville, who was a straight A honor student, got hooked up with the wrong boy, shot heroin. She had like four felonies, everything from burglary to robbery to drug possession, heroin, criminal tools, you name it. Went completely downhill. We got her in the drug court, got her back up. She is now married, bought a house, has a little girl, going back to college for aeronautical engineering. So, but she lost that whole high school experience. And the other night she approached me when we were at the Youth Coalition and said to me, I wished I would have known what heroin did to you before I did it. So that tells me we're not, the education piece is not in there to show these kids what's going on. And, you know, I think that we can't pat it. I think it has to be real. This is what it do. I think we have to be realistic in telling them, you know, we're not gonna tippy toe around this thing. This is it. And I just see people that are not being able, and it's getting worse. I mean, I'm now up to 40 cases of OR people who are just strictly drug. Okay, there's no end in sight. It's grabbing hold, and it's starting younger. And I just think that we need to get a hold of it and start some kind of plan that we can start getting the parents in and the grade schools, start teaching the kids, start showing the kids what it does.
Okay, so if this is a board committee, what is it you're going to report back to the board on a monthly basis?
Every month, what we can do, what we feel we can do education-wise, you know, how can we implement it into starting at kindergarten? Can we do it through the DARE? Can we do another coloring book? What can we, you know, there's things that we need to put together and structure. And I think if we put together a committee, I know one teacher in one of the schools wants to be involved.
Sure.
Has come and said, I want in. So, and so we're going to have a lot of feedback there that where we can start implementing things in and doing these. And if we get the Sheriff's Department on board, we get the Marysville Police Department on board.
I want to be careful, and I think that's an awesome idea and it's something we should, but as a board committee, you're making recommendations to the board, so I want to make sure we're not giving directions from the committee to, we're going to bypass the superintendent and the principal.
Oh, no, it would be recommendations to you
okay.
on what we feel could be done.
Okay.
Then we would vote on it, of
right.
course.
Well, could it be a superintendent committee or some other committee?
Sure, I was actually thinking it would be an ad hoc committee instead of a board committee.
Because, I mean, then you don't have to do
right.
it all. I mean,
right.
You want to be able to talk freely about stuff. Right.
Absolutely.
And
I don't care what type of committee we make it. Or
right,
make
I mean, I'm a
board members can still be on this
absolutely.
Committee.
Right. I was thinking that's why it would be more of an ad hoc yeah. committee or superintendent's committee instead of a board committee. It gives you a little bit more freedom to kind
yeah.
of
yeah, and that's fine.
Do
I have
stuff.
No problem with that. I just feel that we don't have time. To waste. I really feel we need to start implementing this pretty quick.
I mean, I think it's important, and even as we sat at that meeting the other night, you know, first is a data collection exercise to figure out really, you know, what is it we need to focus on, you know, because when I saw that the data that came from CCI, I was a little, you know, cocaine was far more prevalent in this district than heroin was.
And to tell you the truth, I'd rather yeah. see somebody on cocaine than heroin.
Well, yeah, no, I'm just saying that, you know, you look at the two data points, and
right.
you know, of course, alcohol was certainly,
yes.
you know, mm-hmm. a greater that. So you know, before we start charging out there and you know,
right.
and doing that, we would want to do that.
Well, we would bring those in, too, because I work with CCI
sure.
as well.
I would imagine you do.
I work with, and again, I would like their input on it, too, as well. And you know, like what the secondary problem is that 90-some% of the people that I'm seeing now as a residual of using these needles and this and now have hepatitis C.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so we're not just talking about just a one-time event here, shooting here. It's affecting their health. I have 20-year-olds who are now full of hepatitis C. And, you know, they just have no clue. They had no clue they were going to get that when they're sharing needles, you know. So I just think our education is, we're just not educating them.
So to be fair, to say that Amy and I would just get together.
Yeah, I would think it's kind of start pulling that together. And I assume, you know, we'd want to reach out to some of our community members as well, you know, parents. And
what's the drug-free coalition? I mean,
that is also going to be like a youth-to-youth, and we can partner up with them as well, because they're going to have, like, programs and, you know, they've asked me now to be a part of their integral group, and so I'll be able to pull a lot of ideas, you know, from them. So I think if we all just partner up in a team and we start the education process, and I think the parents are clueless. I mean, they're clueless.
Well, you can tell that they're interested by how many people showed up. I mean, there were people standing.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
No question.
Right.
So it's not like they don't want the information.
Right.
But I think nobody's really providing it, which is why they showed up.
Right. I'd like to see Matt on that committee for sure. But I mean, I think he's certainly the frontline person of the end result of maybe, you know, if they get into it early or whatever.
I'd like to see all the principals, you know, at the schools, because, like I said, you know, in high school, if we reach them in high school, it's too late.
No, I realize that, but I'm saying, you know, he sees the end result of that, like, such you do.
But I mean, like, when we're talking about education at a lower age, I mean, there's a lot of things you got to be. I mean, like, I wouldn't know what would be appropriate or inappropriate, so you certainly want somebody in the room who understands that kind of stuff.
I mean, that's not something that's just happening now. I mean, this has been forever, you know, but it's just the drugs are getting more dangerous now.
Right.
You know, I mean, they're loaded guns now.
Again, I was astonished by the number of prescription drugs per person that are prescribed in this county.
We're taking 97% of the whole United States. I mean, the whole world.
The whole world.
97% is consumed by the United States
of the prescription Oxycontin and all that.
Yeah. And what's happening, as they said in the Youth Coalition, I don't know if any of you were there, but about 10 years ago, all the ads started, you know, and, oh, they'll take this for that and take this for that. And so the kids are looking in the parents' and the grandparents' medicine cabinets going, but the doctor gave it to them, so I guess it's okay. It says on TV that it's okay. It'll give you a good night's sleep. It'll do this. It'll do that. So when there's no knowledge and they're not educated, they're just going to pick those pills up, or they listen to a friend. Hey, take this. I just had a guy, I just had to revoke his bond. Oh, well, I had a migraine, so somebody gave me a pill and told me it'd make me feel better, and it made me pass out. Really? You just took a pill from someone? You see, so that's our mentality, a quick fix society. I have a headache. My back hurts. Okay, go to the doctor and get a prescription.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's what these kids are learning. You know, and so that's why I just wanted to.
Okay. Well, thank you for being, you know, the lead on that, to be honest with you, and your passion for that. So I look forward to hearing, you know, kind of the work that you guys get done.
Okay.
And certainly whatever help we can add in or sit in.
Thank you.
Yep. All right. Next up is the minutes from our August 16th regular meeting. I know you all read them. Absorb them. If there are any changes or deletions, actually, I need a motion to accept those first, please.
Okay.
Moved and second. All right. Now, is there any discussion about the minutes from our last meeting? Hearing none. Can I get a roll call, please?
Mrs. Greer.
Yes.
Mrs. Powers.
Yes.
Mr. Mabee.
Yes.
Mrs. Devine.
Yes.
Mr. Laster.
Yes.
Okay, motion carries. Next up, I need a motion to accept the treasurer action items A through F, please.
So moved.
Second.
Moved and second. Discussion, please.
Just one item here on the return of the advance. It looks like on the forecast it's in and out, but that's because of the ed jobs as part of that. Student activities budgets, those are annually approved, and then the other two items, new programs that they would like to establish.
Now, do those fall under, what is it, the 200, the student activity? As opposed to the 300?
The intramural would be a 300, and the ag business would be a 200. But they're all within the student activity budgets, yeah.
Any further questions? Everybody had a chance to look over the permanent appropriations again? As interesting as they are.
We have one question.
Yes, sir.
We were talking about you know, the big difference in the additional expenditures being a lot of open POs that don't get carried over the forecast. So what happens to that?
They just drop off. It's been appropriate. They've been encumbered.
Okay.
A lot of them, and it's less now than what it was when I first started here. A lot of them were in the maintenance and transportation departments. They would appropriate their full amounts at the beginning of the year. I no longer allow them to do that. I don't think it's sound business practice. Mm-hmm. So we try to cut them down as close as we can.
Okay, are there any other questions, comments, discussion? Hearing none, then I need a roll call, please.
Mr. Lassiter.
Yes.
Mrs. Greer.
Yes.
Mr. Mabee.
Yes.
Mrs. Devine.
Yes.
Mrs. Powers.
Yes.
Okay, motion carries. Next up, I need a motion to approve the resolution to accept rates and authorize and certify, please.
So moved.
I'll second that. Moved and second. Discussion.
The rates, I sent you out the new rates, and it's 6.2 for bond. They just missed it when they sent me the first time.
That's not a new rate. That's what we had.
A year ago. They corrected the new format. They corrected those. So everything else is just our basic voted rates on everything else.
Any further discussion? Hearing none, I need a roll call, please.
Mrs. Devine.
Yes.
Mr. Mabee.
Yes.
Mrs. Greer.
Yes.
Mr. Lassiter.
Yes.
Mrs. Powers.
Yes.
Okay, motion carries. All right, our first resolution. I need a motion to approve the resolution not to exceed $515,000 in school improvement refunding bonds, please.
So moved.
Second.
Moved in seconds. Cindy?
This is part of that refunding that we discussed back in July or August, which I guess it was August when John was here.
Correct.
And we've been talking about it, that we would have this opportunity. So this is part of them. And the second one, the next resolution would be the second part of them.
And the 515 is?
It's just that's what that one set of bonds was for.
And the idea is it would lower our...
It'll lower our interest rate that we're paying right now.
Right.
Yes, I think it was. We'll see what we get.
Pretty good numbers.
Yeah, it was 2%. Yeah, it's quite a bit. Yeah, with both of these, you're looking at $1.3 million over the life of it, mm-hmm. at least.
Does that get us paid off the same time, or is that extended
yes.
out?
No, it does not extend that. You can't.
2029.
Yes.
What's the additional savings to combining those? And I'm kind of jumping the gun because that's at the end, isn't it?
Yeah, that's what it's fair enough.
It's probably at the additional to save would be when we go to market. Instead of having that small amount of $515,000, we're going to have that bigger amount to combine them. People like to buy big chunks of bonds when they're buying them. They don't like to buy little amounts.
Is there also a process fee with each one of those? Would you pay a process fee to do two of them instead of one?
You would. And it'll all come out. It'll be the net once we get to that point.
Okay. Any further discussion? Questions? Hearing none, need a roll call, please.
Mrs. Devine.
Yes.
Mr. Lassiter.
Yes.
Mrs. Powers.
Yes.
Mr. Mabee.
Yes.
Mrs. Greer.
Yes.
Okay, motion carries. Next up, I need a motion to approve the resolution not to exceed $10,835,000 in school improvement refunding bonds.
So be it.
Second.
Moved and second. Any discussion? Hearing none. I need a roll call, please.
Mrs. Powers.
Yes.
Mr. Lassiter.
Yes.
Mrs. Devine.
Yes.
Mrs. Greer.
Yes.
Mr. Mabee.
Yes. Okay, motion carries. Next up, we have the... I need a motion to approve the board policy revisions and amendments having to do with the third grade reading guarantee. Any motion for that, please?
So moved.
Second.
Moved and second. Any discussion on that?
Yes. Actually, not discussion.
Questions, comments?
Yeah. I'm assuming that this came from OSBA. There's just two typos I found from OSBA. I know it wasn't you.
Correct.
can we note that for our policy revision? I guess we can change it now. I don't care.
There's just two things.
I know it bothers you, so we can change it. Go ahead,
it doesn't make any difference to me. I just marked them here. I can give it to you.
That'd be perfect.
so we know it.
Any further corrections or comments? If not, then a roll call, please.
Mrs. Devine?
Yes.
Mrs. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Mabee?
Yes.
Mrs. Powers?
Yes.
Mr. Lester?
Yes.
Okay, motion carries. Next up, I need a motion to approve the final settlement agreements for case number, and you can read it, for a workers' compensation claim. Can I get a motion for that, please?
So moved.
Second.
Moved and second. Any discussion, questions? Hearing none, I need a roll call, please.
Mr. Lester?
Yes.
Mrs. Devine?
Yes.
Mrs. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Mabee?
Yes.
Mrs. Powers?
Yes.
Okay, motion carries. Wow, that's kind of caught up to you a little quick there. All right, next up we have the, I need a motion to approve the superintendent goals and objectives that were sent to you.
Okay.
And I will second that. Moved and second. Just a little quick discussion on my marker. As you see in front of you, Diane has laid out the five district goals and then her four objectives. I hope I got that right. Four objectives. To support the five goals. I got it right. I did read them. Just real quickly, you know, for those who don't have it in front of them, obviously her objectives are going to be to implement the Common Core curriculum in the district by be ready to roll out by the start of the next school year. She's obviously going to start building, helping the district build its strategic plan, and we hope to see some of that by the end of the year and probably implemented by the end of next calendar year. Is that correct? Mm-hmm. Her third objective will be to, and she's obviously already started this, to start developing those relationships not only within the district but with outside entities in the district. And certainly her last objective is going to be to review and revise the district safety plans. Certainly giving special attention to any drug-related issues that may involve students in our community. So those are the four objectives that we've kind of outlined for her to do. Is there any comments or questions on those? Hearing none, then I need a roll call, please.
Mrs. Powers?
Yes.
Mr. Mabee?
Yes.
Mrs. Greer?
Yes.
Mrs. Devine?
Yes.
Mr. Lasker?
Yes.
Okay, motion carries. Next up, I need a motion to approve the superintendent action items A through, one moment please, A through N? Yes, 16, A through N, please. Except I don't have a, check, oh here, okay, yes, I need a motion to approve A through N, please.
Second.
Moved and second. Any discussion, Ms. Mankins?
Not at this time.
Okay, were there any questions for the superintendent on her action items? Questions, comments?
Are we including the addendum?
Oh, I'm sorry, yes, and the addendum. The two items on the addendum. Yes. Thank you.
I want to include that.
Yes, the two personnel for this. We'll wrap all that up in the number one.
I don't have a question, but I do have a comment.
All right.
We have got an awesome amount of volunteers. This is just amazing.
Yes, we do. I know. I was looking at some of those elementary schools. I'm like, yes, wow. It's like half of the parents are volunteering there.
Yes.
We are certainly lucky to have that much support in this district.
Yeah.
We certainly could not do what we do without them. So I agree. Thank you to those folks. Any further discussion? Hearing none, then I need a roll call, please.
Mrs. Greer.
Yes.
Mrs. Powers.
Yes.
Mr. Mabee.
Yes.
Mrs. Devine.
Yes.
Mr. Lester.
Yes.
Okay, motion carries. I'm going to jump over to the addendum before I get to board comments then. Item 19, I need a motion to approve the resolution consolidating the two bond issues tonight. Second. Moved and second. Any discussion? Hearing none, I need a roll call, please.
Mrs. Greer.
Yes.
Mr. Mabee.
Yes.
Mrs. Devine.
Yes.
Mr. Lester.
Yes.
Mrs. Powers.
Yes.
Okay, motion carries. Next up, I need a motion to approve the potential reductions and cost savings measures that have been presented by the superintendent, please.
Second.
Move and second. Ms. Mankins, would you like to add any discussion to that?
No, I just think it's important. Basically 35 positions we talked about, including administrators, support staff, and teachers. But to highlight the fact of our commitment, I don't want to miss that part of doing the audit in those various areas, including athletics, special education, supplementals, extended days, and looking at redistricting, building efficiencies, and pass or fail, we're committed to look at those pieces and make adjustments within recommendations that we come up with and data that supports that.
Very good.
Just want to make sure that, and I know we talked about this on Monday, but this us approving this list is just saying that these are the things that we're going to look at to reduce if the levy.
Yeah, I like the word that you use. It's a framework.
Framework.
It is really what I'd like to categorize.
We're not committing to doing any of these things at this point. We're just saying these are the things we look at. Because I think there's other things we would look at as well. That maybe, I mean, we have assumptions in our forecast that I think would be on the table as well.
Correct. Mm-hmm. And I think it says something up in that wording about final decisions are made, all areas will be analyzed and addressed, that this is more to give a sense of what $2 million means. Right. You know, what does that, to give a framework, I guess, for people to understand what we are talking about. It's hard sometimes to equate $2 million. What is that? What does that look like? What are you talking about?
And then in making these changes, the impact that that would have on this district is that it would look different. This is, I think, how you
put substantial. It. Substantial. I think that's the one thing. I've had a couple of building conversations this week, and quite simply, we're at that point where we cannot continue to do business the way we are currently. And so the community needs to make that decision whether they can support us. But the understanding is we will look totally different if we lose $2 million, not to mention if we would not pass a renewal in the following year. So as we talk about that whole package, you know, we have the new, the two renewals, and a renewal following. I know we are isolating them, but we really need the whole package to be successful.
Right, this list doesn't go away. If we pass new money, you know, this list is still in play.
This would be a good place to start from.
No, if we pass it, if we pass the four, but we're still talking about these as we move into the, you know, the renewals.
Right.
So, I mean, that list doesn't go away with just new money. It's kind of, you have to continue.
It would be a place to start each time if we were faced. And again, I've tried to reiterate every time I'm talking to someone, the what's essential for us, and I think all of you know, but I'm going to say it again, is that we pass in November because we collect in January. Mm-hmm. If we have to go in the spring, it's going to be more millage, most likely, and we cannot pass or we cannot collect until January of 2014. Mm-hmm. So cuts would still have to take place. We would still have to put into place reduction measures. Mm-hmm. And I think we can't forget that. Is that fair?
Yes. The when you say different, mm-hmm. we're not talking good different. We're talking
no, I'm sorry. It's not good different. No, we would. In there are a lot of areas we are already operating in a very lean manner. Cutting more into those areas is going to have an impact on offerings for students and opportunities for students in the classroom, as well as is our ability to be as efficient in the offices and in those kind of areas, because we're talking about 13 support staff as well. So we've talked about if it were custodians, there's got to be a give to get. You can't put fewer people in and expect the same outcome. So maybe there would have to be, you know, priority cleaning. Maybe your whiteboards only were cleaned, you know, every other day. I don't know. But right. those are examples that we're talking about. We'd have to look at the way we operate in a different way. That would be uncomfortable, I believe, for staff and the community and students.
when they come to work or when they come to our schools.
And I guess my expectations is, you know, if we find ourselves in a position to have to do that, that we're looking at these things in a kids first approach, and that includes the assumptions in our forecast, that we look at it in that way.
Well, I think if that levy goes down, I mean, those assumptions would have to change.
Right.
I mean, I don't see how they couldn't. Mm-hmm. So, unless I'm missing something.
I mean, it's a difficult conversation.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's right. But if that goes down, you're absolutely right. The conversations will be difficult. No, I don't think anyone sitting here thinks about the idea of losing 35 people as a positive for anybody in this district. The stories we've told about just what happened this week, and that didn't even have anything to do with kids directly, but how people chipped in. They're quality people who work in this district, and we want to do everything we can to keep them involved and working for us. And I think, you know, that's kind of where we are, and I'm hopeful that the community will support us in November. We need approximately 6,350 votes to make that happen.
Besides, you don't have it down to the vote, though.
I think I have a tattoo of that right here. But I think that, you know, that's our commitment to make that successful in November, so we don't have to engage in that conversation, but we definitely have to have a framework to go from or a plan if it doesn't work out.
Okay. Yeah, and I have to tell you, I'm just as... You know, the discussions on that back page about yes. doing our audits and stuff, I think to me is, I don't know if it's exciting or not, but it's certainly, those may not be the most comfortable conversations, but I'm happy to say that we're having those conversations. I think that's important.
I mean, I think it shows a commitment. It shows a commitment to the community.
Right.
You know, and really to the whole district, that we're just trying to do things the smartest, most effective way.
And I think I said on Monday night, we've already started some of those pieces, and so some of them are not a one-day, two-day project, but we'll continue to share our progress on those with you. And we did an in-depth look at our staffing and looking at the students, and do we have, you know, situations where we're overstaffed, and you know, we've had the special ed conversation, and having a third party audit come in and look, we're losing Ellen will be retiring this year, and she takes with her a whole lot of history. And although I'm sure she would answer any phone call we have, we certainly would like someone to come in and say, okay, these are the things that are going well, and these are best practices in these areas, just to kind of give us something to move forward from as well.
Yeah, I just think it's refreshing to have a different set of eyes. I think that's always, you always get a little bit different perspective. It's not better, it's not worse. It's just, you know, it's just a different set of eyes. I think it's a good thing. So, all right. Were there any other comments, discussions on this item? Hearing none, then I need a roll call, please.
Mrs. Devine.
Yes.
Mr. Lassiter.
Yes.
Mrs. Powers.
Yes.
Mr. Mabee.
Yes.
Mrs. Greer.
Yes.
Okay, motion carries. Next up, I need a motion to approve the resolution for urgent necessity to initiate repairs.
Second.
Moved and second then. Is there any discussion on this?
Oh, we're just sorry we have to have that. <right there. laughs>
Any further discussion? Hearing none, can I get a roll call, please?
Mrs. Powers.
Yes.
Mr. Lassiter.
Yes.
Mrs. Devine.
Yes.
Mrs. Greer.
Yes.
Mr. Mabee.
Yes. Motion carries. You can begin the process. All right. Last up, we'll just go around the horn. Any final comments from board members? Ms. Powers?
Nothing.
Mr. Lassiter?
I want to reiterate what you were saying about us basically looking at looking at places we can be more efficient, or just looking at things from an outside perspective, I think that is, I mean, I honestly think that's something that we can really be proud of. I talked to a lot of board members in a lot of other districts, and I don't think, there's not a lot of districts that do that, and I think it's something for us to be proud of.
I agree. Ms. Devine?
I'm speechless.
Ms. Greer?
Ditto.
Ms. Mankins?
I'm good.
The only thing I will say is, don't forget to register to vote. October 9th is the last day. And thank you all for all, certainly all the work you've done over this challenging week. You know, I think it was really, I mean, you folks kind of kept the ball rolling, and I know it wasn't easy. So with that, I need a motion to adjourn then, please.
So moved.
Second.
Moved and second. Roll call, please.
Mrs. Devine.
Yes.
Mrs. Powers.
Yes.
Mr. Mabee.
Yes.
Mrs. Greer.
Yes.
Mr. Lassiter.
Yes.
Okay. We are adjourned.